Invite you to open your Bibles one more time to Judges chapter 16. Judges chapter 16. We've been studying from some lessons from a strong man, Samson. And this is the first time I've actually preached through his life. And quite frankly, there have been some things that I struggle with, because the lessons have been more of a negative nature than positive. And as you see picture before you, and there's some debate as to exactly what it would look like, as we come to the end of his life, we realize that he's in prison. In fact, Judges 16:21 says, "Then the Philistines took him and put out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza. They bound him with the bronze fetters, and he became a grinder in the prison." I'm sure he never dreamed it would come to this. Samson had been the mightiest man of Israel, hero of his people, deliverer of the nation, a judge for 20 years. I'm sure he never, ever dreamed that he would end up in prison grinding grain. And it would seem such a long, long time ago, I'm sure, to him to remember the message that his parents had told him that the angel had given them before his birth. That there were some special instructions that he would be a Nazarite from birth, and that his mission, his God-given mission, would be that he would begin to deliver Israel from the hands of the Philistines. Perhaps in anger and rage, he pounds on the walls of his prison cell with only self-condemning words ringing out as if to mock him. I'm sure he had to endure the mocking taunts of the Philistine prison guards as well. He had wreaked havoc on the Philistines. Now he was powerless and bound in prison, grinding grain. Did a little study, grinding grain. It was done using millstones, and there were two types of millstones, or at least two types, two major types. There were the private millstones or hand mills, fairly small, consisting of a large flat base stone with a depression in the middle, and then a lighter, rounded, perhaps oval or loaf-shaped stone with which to do the grinding. I've seen different descriptions. Some of the one who's grinding it would move the stone across the base stone, grinding the grain, or some, and you remember reading Matthew 24, two women grinding at the mill. There was one that was made that had a circular stone on the top with a handle stuck in it. One woman would sit on one side, one on the other, and they would take turns pulling that stone and grinding the corn. The smaller upper millstone, worked by hand, might weigh as little as 5 pounds or as much as 10 to 15 pounds. The lower millstone would be flat and weigh 2 to 3 times more at least. But then there was a commercial millstone, many times larger. The commercial upper millstone had some sort of indention for a wooden bar that would be inserted. And it would be turned by a beast of burden such as an ox, a horse, or a donkey. You remember Jesus' statement? If anyone causes this little one to be offended, it'd be better for a millstone to be hung around his neck and be cast into the depths of the sea. That word there refers to the millstone, this commercial millstone that might be turned by a donkey. It was extremely heavy. And you can imagine that being attached to a person and how quickly they would sink. One writer suggests that when the blinded Samson was set to work grinding in the Philistine prison, it may have been with that regular small hand mill, as it wouldn't be unusual for prisoners to be put to work doing that. But it may have been that he was used in place of that donkey, turning a very large commercial millstone, as this picture presents. The commercial version of the upper millstone could easily weigh 100 pounds and its corresponding base several hundred pounds. And the Philistines, I'm sure, loved to see Samson grinding grain. The one that had been so powerful, that had killed so many Philistines all day long, blind Samson, perhaps pushed that pole around and around and around, hour after hour. And it begs the question, how did this happen? We've been exploring the answer to that question. How did a man who started so well end like that? Please understand this. Samson never meant for it to end like this. I'm sure as he was thinking about his life, he wasn't thinking about ending it this way. He never meant for this to happen. It was a series of major mistakes, a series of life-changing blunders that caused this man of so much potential to fail in many ways so miserably. Let me remind you of a few of these major mistakes, these life-changing blunders. Number one, he ignored his heritage. He had godly parents, a godly calling. He knew what God's will for him was. He was born for greatness, but it seems he never appreciated what he had. He dillied and dallied. He went this way and that. He messed around with lesser things, and in the process, wasted his life away. He ignored his heritage. Many of us have a strong spiritual heritage. Let's take note. Let's take heed that him who thinks he stands can fall just as he if we ignore our spiritual heritage. Number two, he unleashed his rage. Samson was an angry man. He had an anger problem. He was frequently out of control. Let me remind you a few of his angry responses. When his 30 groomsmen plowed with his heifer or talked with his wife and got her to tell the answer to the riddle, in anger he went down and killed 30 men in order to pay off his debt of 30 changes of clothing. He leaves in a huff after that without consummating his marriage. And later he catches 300 foxes, ties a torch as he ties their tails in pairs together, and sends them in rage to burn up all the wheat fields, the olive orchards, the vineyards, all the things by which the Philistines made their livelihood. When they put his fiance, if you will, and her father to death, he really gets angry and slaughters many more Philistines. You remember on another occasion, he takes up the jawbone of a donkey and kills 1,000 men. And again, I want to underscore that at this point, it seems God is using one man's character flaws to accomplish his purposes with Israel's enemy. But in spite of his victories, we see Samson's anger led him to many sins. Number three, he strayed from his promises. If he didn't cross the line, he came as close as he could to crossing some of those boundaries that the Nazarite vow would place upon him. He broke his promise to stay pure. And he strayed from his spiritual commitments. But let's learn from him. If we stray, we can fall just as he. He indulged his passions. Again, one of my favorite quotes, he was a he man with a she weakness. His passion caused him to choose a marriage partner very poorly. His first recorded words were, "I saw a woman." A Philistine woman, as you remember. He was attracted to women strictly based on outward appearance. And it happened time and time again. And he indulged his passions. And he teaches us this, that feeding illicit passions will blind you, then bind you. He was blinded. Even before his eyes were gouged out, Samson was blinded. How so? Because he didn't look at what acting upon these passions, illicit passions, where they would lead him. He became blinded far before his eyes were taken out of his eye sockets. He became blind to the distance placed between him and God. He became blind to the destruction to which these decisions would take him. Again, he teaches us feeding illicit passions will blind you, then bind you. He also took revenge. In his anger, he took revenge. Revenge is an uncontrollable monster. We see that portrayed in his life. Each act of retaliation brings another. And again, he's proof positive of that. The "I'll show you" attitude usually shows how low you will stoop in order to seek revenge. And we see Samson stooping ever so low. It's no wonder the scriptures teach us, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord." Therefore, we're not to take vengeance. And Samson should be a big reason why we wouldn't even want to consider it. Another major mistake, he believed in himself more than he believed in God. It seems that he forgot where his power came from. I'm not talking about his hair. I'm talking about what that hair represented. And that vow that he made to God. And it was God who had given him that strength. But it seems that he simply says, "Well, that's my strength." That's why he was able to, or why he toyed around with Delilah in ultimately sharing with her the secret of his strength, being attached to his long hair, which was part of that vow that he had made. But any time we begin to lean on our own strength rather than depending on God, we too will fall. So we come to the end. Look with me, Judges 16, beginning with verse 23. "Now the lords of the Philistines gathered together to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to rejoice. And they said, 'Our God has delivered into our hands Samson, our enemy.' When the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, 'Our God has delivered him into our hands, our enemy, the destroyer of our land, and the one who multiplied our dead.' So it happened when their hearts were merry that they said, 'Call for Samson that he may perform for us.' And they called for Samson from the prison and he performed for them. And they stationed him between the pillars. Then Samson said to the lad who held him by the hand, 'Let me feel the pillars which support the temple so that I can lean on them.' Now the temple was full of men and women. All the lords of the Philistines were there. In fact, there were about 3,000 men and women on the roof who watched while Samson performed." I don't know what he did to perform on this occasion. I'm certain that as he did whatever he did, whatever he was compelled, forced to do, that there were thousands of people mocking him. Perhaps throwing things at him, making fun of him. It was the temple of Dagon in Gaza, the holiest spot in the Philistine religion. Dagon was the god of harvest, and each year the Philistines offered sacrifices to this god, this false god, when they planted their seeds. And again, at harvest time, they offered more sacrifices to thank Dagon for his help. And perhaps it's one of these that they're assembled together. And they're rejoicing not only perhaps because of the harvest or planting time, but because Samson, their number one enemy, has been defeated. "Call for Samson. Bring him in. Let him perform for us." The temple apparently was built in two levels. The bottom level, so it's described, was an open arena with seats around it. Then it had an upper level built over the lower section with a hole in the middle to let the people above watch what was happening in the arena below. On one end was the pedestal upon which the statue of Dagon sat. And coming out from the sides of the building were columns supporting this upper level, which apparently sloped down into the middle. so that the bulk of the weight rested on two mighty columns near the center of the arena. Hundreds of people would climb to the upper level so they could have a good view of what was happening in the arena. But on this occasion, no doubt because Samson had been defeated, there were 3,000 Philistines on the roof. They'd all come to see this man that had been a constant thorn in the Philistine side, had killed thousands of Philistines. But he'd been defeated, bound, eyes gouged out, powerless. He performed for them. Perhaps it's while he's out in the middle of that vast arena performing for the Philistines, I wonder if these words came back to him. You will begin to deliver your people from the Philistines. Samson asks that servant boy to lean him up against those two great columns supporting the weight, the major weight of that upper level. Verse 28. Then Samson called to the Lord, saying, O Lord God, remember me, I pray. Strengthen me, I pray, just this once, O God, that I may with one blow take vengeance on the Philistines for my two eyes. I want you to look at that. It's a prayer. It's not one of the most noble prayers in the Bible. You see, to the very end, Samson is thinking only of himself, not so much of his people. He's motivated primarily by revenge. Give me strength one more time that I may take vengeance on the Philistines for my two eyes. However, there's something about his prayer that gets God's attention. What we see here is Samson acknowledging the source of his strength. And he's asking God, remember me. Verse 29, Samson took hold of the two middle pillars which supported the temple, and he braced himself against them, one on his right and the other on his left. Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. And he pushed with all his might, and the temple fell on the Lord's and all the people who were in it. So the dead that he killed at his death were more than he had killed in his life. That's a tragic ending, isn't it? But I tend to believe that Samson at this point, in some way, is coming back to God. He's like the general who knows the only way to win the victory is to lead his troops into battle, even though for him, he knows it means certain death. He was seeking to fulfill the mission to which God had called him with the strength that only God could provide. And his prayer was simple. I want to underscore one part of it. Oh God, remember me. And what I'm wondering is, in this statement, is he saying, Lord, I belong to you at the beginning. And Lord, I've wandered away. And I've made some horrible mistakes, and I blew it. And I deserve everything that's happened to me. But Lord, would you at this time please remember me one more time? Give me the strength. Give me the strength. And the answer seems to be that God remembered him and helped him. What's the moral of the story? I want to suggest this. The moral of the story is not that Samson is a hero. The moral of the story is the hero is God. It's a lesson in the grace of God. How can a man beaten and blinded, humiliated by his own repeated stupidity, reach the bottom, turned around, and discovered God was right there waiting for him? Samson's not the hero. All he did was turn at the last moment, and he found God was waiting. You see, the story of Samson gives us some hope for us when we blow it. You remember Samson, by the grace of God, had his name recorded in faith's hall of fame. Hebrews 11. What more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson. He's there. As I was studying for this, I was reminded of a statement that I've heard W.T. Allison make in the past. Sometimes people don't look up to God until they're flat on their backs. And I'm thinking Samson. Flat on his back, if you will, finally looked back up to God. He looked up with the eyes of faith in the end, and God blessed him. Sometimes we're a lot like Samson. We just make mistake after mistake after mistake. We finally hit rock bottom and we look up. And we ask, God, will you take me back? And because of his grace, and if we're truly penitent, the answer will be yes. I'll take you back. Come on home. Sometimes we may be able to identify with Samson. Oh, so much potential. So much going for him. But he threw it away in so many ways. Mistake after mistake after mistake. He's simply thinking about the here and now and not the hereafter. But I'm afraid so many times we can be a lot like him. But in the end, we have to realize God is the hero, because he'll take us back. He'll take us back. Perhaps you can identify with Samson. Perhaps you see some of the very mistakes, and the reason he made those mistakes are the very reasons why we make those mistakes. Perhaps we're asking, God, will you take me back? And the answer, because of his love for us, is yes. There's provision through the gift of my son Jesus, that I'll take you as my child if you'll turn your life over to me. If you'll confess Jesus and be baptized into Christ as a penitent believer, you'll become part of my family. And even as a child of God who's gone off, made some mistakes, horrible mistakes like Samson, he says, if you'll turn to me and follow me, I'll take you back. If you need to respond to the invitation, God's invitation tonight, please do so right now as we stand and sing.